So, Kevin, you got all your Christmas shopping done?
No.
I am way behind, man.
are you one of those wait till the last minute kind of things?
Not by choice, but usually yes.
Well, you know, we still do have some pretty nice antiquities down in the Culture Clash basement if you wanted to gift out any of those.
Yeah, I may have to dive into that. Yeah.
I can get you a good price on an Ark of the Covenant.
Is it a used one? Has it been opened?
More than once, I think. But you know, there's nobody around to confirm that. So.
What about you? How you doing?
I got a long way to go and a short time to get there, as the song once said.
Yeah. What's funny real quick is that usually when Camille gives me her list, I get a little bit late on it sometimes, and I forget that some of the stuff she wants comes from Japan. So there may be a few things that she's not going to have in time for Christmas.
Well, speaking of Christmas shopping, I think in this week's Culture Clash, Disney might be doing a little Christmas shopping.
Oh, yes, they are.
So I think without...
And by the way, we will receive presents from this transition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or transaction, I should say.
Yeah. So I think without further ado, we need to double check our list. Make sure there's nobody on the naughty list.
I'm out.
Well, yeah. Well, you're a Raider fan. What do you expect? But on that note, as the big man once said, ho, 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 let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
So, Kevin, it's Culture Clash 67. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. When you refer to the big man, you mean Santa Claus, right?
Well, I was talking about my former neighbor in Alaska, Nick.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, your former neighbor, Nick. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a reindeer farmer. It was kind of weird.
So how's it going, man? Culture Clash 67.
Yeah, can't complain. Still kind of watching the Avengers trailer on a continuous loop. I might be able to recite it line for line at this point, but
this is true. I've actually started, I believe, probably my 10th re-listen to Ready Player One.
That's on the docket for the holidays.
Yeah, it's just so good, and I'm looking forward to doing a little Ready Player One countdown here on Culture Clash soon. So I'm looking forward to that.
Something to look forward to towards the first of the year. But you know what, Kevin, before we dive into this week's show, we got a little business. Can you help me out here?
Yeah, sure. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network if you want to stream all of our shows there, including Culture Clash that you're listening to right now. You can do it directly at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also find Fandom Podcast Network on the Podbean app. Of course, the Fandom Podcast Network can be found in most of your podcast catchers like iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. And also we have a Facebook group. Head over to Fandom Podcast Network, give us some likes, and check us out what we got there. If you want to email us directly, you can do so at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. And also, Fandom Podcast Network is on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter is at FanPod Network. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Kyle, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. And Kevin, real quick, I got to give a quick shout out to our good buddy Matt Clifton. He just had his birthday this past weekend.
Yeah, he did.
So, you know, the Florida Fulcrum, always out there doing good work, at least.
I like that jersey that he got that says F Fulcrum on the back of it. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. But speaking of gear, Kevin, it is Christmas time. And, you know, you might want to ask Santa for some new clothes, maybe a tapestry, a pillow maybe. Which brings us to our partnership with TeePublic. Because you can go to TeePublic and visit the Fandom Podcast Network store and find gear for all of our great shows here, whether it's here at Culture Clash, Time Warp, Couch Potato Theater, a little Blood of Kings, maybe some Team Iron Pipe action. And of course, we can't forget all those wonderful Discoville designs Norman Lau did for us.
Yeah, I just ordered a couple of those shirts for myself.
So they have all kinds of sales going on through the holidays. So just get over to tpublic.com and search Fandom Podcast Network, and you'll find some great gear, make some great gifts for your friends. So, Kevin, I think without further delay, I can feel something in the air.
Oh, we've got lots of. So let's do it. Let's news.
Let's news. So we said at the beginning of the show, Kevin, Disney's doing some Christmas shopping. And boy, oh boy, can they do some Christmas shopping for me? Because they don't do the cheap Christmas shopping over at the Mouse Ears.
No, they do not.
So a few weeks ago, we talked about this in a rumor that Disney was in negotiations to possibly buy a big chunk of Fox. More than anything, the movie side, maybe some of their TV shows and stuff. And then it kind of died down. But in the last week, Kevin, it's really picked up to the point where it looks like sometime next week we're going to get an announcement.
Now, this is just for like these kind of superhero and Star Wars, what's left over the distribution rights for the earlier Star Wars film. Not like it doesn't include sports or anything like that. It says 20th Century Fox is reporting aiming to focus on its news and sports division and sell off outside assets, including its movie and TV studios and its stake in various networks such as Fox, FX, Sky, and Star TV. That would also include the film rights for Marvel Entertainment's Fantastic Four and X-Men, some distribution rights for earlier Star Wars films, partial ownership of Boom Studios, and a stake in Hulu. Disney and Comcast each own stakes already. So I got a question for you. So let's say this happens, which it looks like that it is. How would you see them... Disney taking on Fantastic Four and X-Men? Do you see a complete reboot of the X-Men franchise or combining them into the current Marvel MCU? What's your wish list on this?
Okay, well, a few things. First of all, those of you who still might be questioning this, there was a piece of news that broke right before we recorded, and it's been announced that Bob Iger, who was getting ready to end his run with Disney, is staying on to make sure this deal gets completed. That's a pretty big thing. And of course, Disney's about to drop $60 billion to make this purchase from Fox.
$60 billion?
Oh, yeah.
God. Yeah. Okay, so hold on. If they're ready to drop $60 billion, then how much is Disney worth?
Well, come on. They punch out a couple of Avengers movies. They've got this covered.
Well, you're in Star Wars too, so yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez. Wow.
But I mean, there's a lot of ramifications about this, but let's start, Kevin, I think, with the two most obvious. The impact with the Marvel films and the impact on Star Wars. With Marvel, they get back the Fantastic Four rights. I think Fantastic Four is in such a disaster state that it would just be a fresh reboot, but Here's the whole interesting thing about this with both Fantastic Four and X-Men, and I honestly do believe they'd have to, outside of maybe Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, you have to go complete reboot on both of these franchises. Here's the interesting thing. We know that Avengers 4 is going to be really the end of this major 10-year phase of the Marvel Universe movies, and they're getting ready to move in different directions. What better way to start that new phase with the Fantastic Four, the first family of the Marvel Universe?
Are you thinking then they're just going to kind of recast new characters that we've become familiar with and have new Iron Men's and stuff like that? Or are they just going to kind of go with some properties that they hasn't been part of the universe for a while?
I think that's what it's going to be. It's more properties that hasn't been part of the universe. I mean, you have to understand it, at least in Fantastic Four's case, Marvel tried to distance itself so much from it. They don't even have a Fantastic Four comic they're putting out right now, Kevin. But there's a kind of an underrated thing as far as the Marvel hero villain universe with them, if they get all these Fantastic Four rights back, because they get a major Marvel villains movie rights back, Kevin.
Clarify, what do you mean exactly?
the Fox deal with on Fantastic Four was that they had the rights to any characters that had already appeared in a Fantastic Four film.
Okay.
Well, one of those characters is by considered by many to be like the villain of the Marvel Universe, and that is Doctor Doom.
Mm.
So getting his that character's rights specifically back opens up a whole new can of worms that Marvel can use to dive into for a main, the next major villain after Thanos.
So I got a question for you then. If when this deal goes through, what rights does Fox have towards any superhero films, or are they done?
They're done. But Fox Movie Studios is Disney now.
Okay. Okay.
And a lot of Fox Television is Disney now too. So here's the other thing with this. I talk about the X-Men franchise. And I read an interesting article about this, and I actually kind of agree with this point. I think the X-Men franchise, yes, you could incorporate it into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you could also just continue to make it its own separate entity because the X-Men can stand out on their own.
So yeah, I'm but people have been wanting to see them mix, though, with the current MC universe. So this is why people are getting excited about this, in addition to the distribution rights for the earlier Star Wars films.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the other huge thing as far as fandom goes with the huge tentpole franchises is Disney now would have distribution rights to the original Star Wars films.
Yeah, which you know people are wanting to see Blu-ray versions of the original theatrical cuts of the films too. I'm assuming that falls under that as well.
Yeah, so I'm very curious what's going to happen there. And really, Kevin, though, I think the really big thing out of all of this on the interesting side of it is we know Disney's getting ready to start their own streaming service in 2019. Not only now will they have that entire Disney catalog, they're going to have that entire Fox catalog.
Yeah, that's going to be a streaming service that I think people are going to jump on. Probably be a little more excited about that than CBS All Access.
Now, I'm gonna throw on the flip side of this. There's a lot to be excited about this, but Kevin, there is one kind of concern I have with this is that Disney's controlling a big chunk of the production market now between Fox Studios, Disney, Lucasfilm, Marvel. That's a big chunk of Hollywood Disney has under their thumb at this point.
Yeah. I don't know if I really got a straight answer from you regarding what you want to see happen right away. I mean, I guess you're saying kind of a reboot, but I mean, of course we got a lot of popular X-Men characters here. Of course, Wolverine being one of them. What do you want to see right away?
I personally would rather see Fantastic Four than X-Men because I think we need a little bit of distance from X-Men films outside of Deadpool. Now, this comes into the thing I'm kind of worried about now. Will Disney roll with the craziness of Deadpool as it is under the current Ryan Reynolds situation? I hope so. I really hope that this is something Disney understands certain things they have and allows for it to be as is. I think it's a great time to reboot the X-Men franchise. It's been a mess. We know about X-Men Apocalypse and what our feelings are on that, Kevin. We know Hugh Jackman stepped away now from doing any more Wolverine things.
I wish he would come back one more time with Deadpool, though.
I think Hugh Jackman has got that in his back pocket to do that for Ryan Reynolds. We know that Patrick Stewart says he's pretty much done playing Xavier. So I think if you go for 3 or 4 years and really sit back, kind of let things settle on X-Men, really develop a good, solid X-Men film, I would like to see them do that with X-Men. I think with Fantastic Four, I'd like to see them kind of up the timetable on Fantastic Four and make that maybe their first big announcement. Our first project of this is a new Fantastic Four film.
Is that too soon, though, especially after the last failed one?
I don't think so because I think a lot of people just have called that last failed Fantastic Four movie not even a Fantastic Four film at this point. They just kind of, it's kind of been forgotten. But you know what? I do have to give Chris Evans some props, Kevin. He went on Twitter today and said, come on, Captain America Human Torch, buddy travel film. We got to do it.
That would be entertaining. Back to back. Oh, that's funny.
But, you know, I'm very excited about this. I'm really excited about the streaming service, what this can mean. I think Netflix is in panic mode as far as, because not only now will they be looking at possibly losing all those Disney licenses off of Netflix, all those 20th Century Fox things, and Netflix might be looking at just becoming their own production company, and all you're going to see is original Netflix material. But by the time this is all said and done.
Oh, geez. Well, I just want to mention real quick, I got on my news feed here that during Thursday night football, you're going to see the trailer for the full trailer for the new Jurassic World movie. It's called Kingdom Fallen, I think.
Fallen Kingdom.
Fallen Kingdom, yeah. So that's when you're going to be able to see it. Of course, you'll probably see it on online a few seconds after that.
Well, okay, that brings up an interesting piece of news thing I want to ask you about real quick, then, Kevin, before we get into the next piece of news. I posted one of the short trailers on my Facebook feed, and I believe
you
it was
mean
buddy,
you mean the teaser trailer for the trailer,
right? And I can't. It was one of our good friends posted on there. Do we really need teaser? When did we start needing teaser trailers for trailers? And that's become kind of a trend, especially for these large films. What do you think of this trend, Kevin?
You know, I can see why people think it's silly, but when you have a huge, huge movie getting ready to release a trailer that people have become very, very excited for, I don't see a problem with it. But when you start doing it with films that people are just kind of, you know, like, I don't know why they're doing it for the Jurassic World movie.
I don't see
this as a big anticipated film like some other films that are coming out later, you know?
Yeah, but Jurassic movies make big bucks.
Yeah, but the thing, though, is that I don't know if the last Jurassic World, and we talked about this before, I don't know if it has a high rewatchability. People aren't talking about it right now.
Yeah, so much right now.
It's kind of, to me, it's kind of like a one and done deal. You know, people are going to go, oh, let's go see the new dinosaur movie. And they go, and then that's it, you know. But I don't think I don't think it holds up.
Yeah, I know. I can see that. I think it's a lot of one and done, but it's a whole lot of one and done. Yeah. So, but
I'm going to watch the trailer, of course. But as of right now, I'm not really excited about it. Give me another Ready Player One, and then we'll talk.
Yeah, we need a new Ready Player One trailer. I mean, I will go see Jurassic World. I have outside of maybe Jurassic Park 2, which I wasn't a huge fan of, just because I thought it was so different than the book in that aspect. I've enjoyed pretty much all the Jurassic Park films, and you know, you go to see the dinosaurs. You're not there to see the actors; you're there to see the dinosaurs. So
the thing I'm getting tired of though is the kids in danger. I'm done with that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So I think that's kind of my one hope for this next Jurassic film is that we're going to get away from some of the classic Jurassic Park tropes we've had so far. But, well, we'll get into more of that after we see the trailer. But we had another piece of kind of breaking news maybe about an hour or so before we recorded tonight, Kevin, and that was Rian Johnson kind of came out and put to squash a rumor that a lot of people have been talking about his trilogy of Star Wars films being based off the Old Republic. He has said he's a fan of the Old Republic. He loved the game, but it's something we've already seen. He wants to do something nobody has seen before.
I'm guessing that he's been actually working on this for a little while now. The news didn't drop till just recently, but I think this was something that he was given probably maybe as long as, you know, 6 months to a year ago. And so he's been in production of this, and this was a decision that he made right away, or, you know, sooner, you know, I guess a while ago is what I'm saying. How do you feel about that?
I love this because if you want my honest opinion, I think if you're going to do Old Republic, having it be the television series that's exclusive to the Disney streaming service is the way to go, because I think you need more time and more space to work with on the Old Republic than just a movie. I think it translates better. You might get that Game of Thrones vibe, because in 2019, we're going to be looking for something to fill that Game of Thrones slot. And a Star Wars TV show, The Old Republic, that would be great. And I'm ready to see something new on my theater screen for Star Wars. I mean, I get that Rogue One was, we had tie-ins to the original film and a big chunk of that story, but it was something new and in a space we hadn't seen a lot of before. And I was really excited about that. I'm excited for Han Solo and the aspect that we're going to see new aspects of the Star Wars universe. And I'm really coping to find out soon. We find out soon what the third standalone film is going to be, because I'm really interested in the direction that goes. But I'm just looking forward to seeing something fresh. And, you know, that was one of the things I was very excited about when Force Awakens has hit, was to see some things fresh. And yes, we had some old tie-ins, but we still saw some fresh new things. So I'm just very excited about that.
I am with you there. I am. I do think that the TV series should go with the Old Republic, and if it doesn't, I'm going to be a little disappointed. I don't want to see a TV series in between certain films we've already seen. I want to see something new and fresh. Regarding Rian Johnson's new trilogy, I'm kind of curious where in the time frame that's going to take place. I'm wondering if it's going to take place before Force Awakens, because I don't think it could take place after Episode 9. I don't think that's what he's planning on doing. So, yeah, I'm really curious about that. I hope one day they do explore the Old Republic, and I hope the TV series, because I think you're right. They give it that kind of Game of Thrones vibe, you know, make it destination TV. And that is a perfect way to launch the Disney streaming service, as well as, you know, including a bunch of other great programming on that as well.
Yeah. Now, there is one other piece of Star Wars news, and I felt like this kind of was a little under the radar, Kevin, as far as people didn't seem to really make a big deal about this, but Daisy Ridley kind of let it out of the bag after Episode 9. She is done with Rey.
You know, I read this and I was like, you know, why do you say that now? And so I was starting to, you know, doubt whether or not this was like genuine or not. But then I saw something else that she was backing off from, that she's not done with Rey. So I don't really know what to do with this. I understand her wanting to take a break, but, you know, if you are she's an A-list celebrity now. If you're a celebrity and you're part of a very popular franchise that has the possibility to do sequels later on, don't say stuff like this. This bugged me. And I don't know if this was kind of her words being taken out of context or what, because of what had, you know, what she had supposedly said after that. She was backing off from that, saying that now that maybe she's not done. You know, don't disappoint fans like this. Just don't say anything. If they ask you, do you plan on returning to the Star Wars franchise, go with the Mark Hamill go-to response. It's possible.
Yeah. Well, you know, Kevin, what I'm going to say about this is I think this is a little bit of Daisy Ridley being very young in Hollywood. Yeah, she's an A-list celebrity, but we got to remember, she was basically a complete unknown before Force Awakens. She hadn't really done a lot of work in Hollywood. She had a great experience on doing Murder of the Orient Express, which she's gotten a lot of positive reviews for. And she's very young in her career. Maybe she was just, they caught her at a moment where she was, you know, really feeling like she didn't want to get pigeonholed as this character. You know, she's just starting in her career, a little bit of Hollywood naivety there for her to say what she said. I think you said it perfectly, Kevin. The best answer would have been the standard Mark Hamill answer. And I am sure Mr. Hamill probably grabbed her and pulled her aside and said, or sent her a text or something saying, you need to handle this a little better. Yes, you might not want to do anymore, but don't just shut off your fan base like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of felt it was kind of clickbait as well, but you know, who knows whether she meant that or not. I hope everyone involved learned a lesson from that.
Yeah, I hope so too. Now, the next piece of news, Kevin, I'm not quite sure how to process this one, so I'm looking for your.
Well, I know there's a lot. I know there's a lot of Star Trek fans and stuff going, no, no, and I'm like, shut up.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, Wes, we are talking about the rumors that are floating, and very strong rumors that J.J. Abrams is looking to bring Quentin Tarantino in to write and direct a Star Trek film.
I thought it was just writing.
No. The article I read was possibly directing as well.
You know what? I say bring it on. I'm excited about this. I like Star Trek.
Are we really ready for Grindhouse Trek?
What's that? Yeah, Grindhouse Trek. You know, I like his directing style. You know, okay, you know why I'm excited about this? Because in my mind, when it comes to someone that can write a script and develop characters, Tarantino can do this. When I saw Pulp Fiction for the first time, I walked out of that film with a new appreciation for the screenwriting process. I had never enjoyed a film more about watching people just talk to each other and the way that he developed those characters in that film. And that's one of the things I've always enjoyed with Tarantino films, is he can do that. And this is a big reason why I love Kill Bill 2 in certain aspects more than the first one, because yes, it's not action-packed like the first one, but the dialogue in that film is just fantastic with all of the characters involved. And in all of his films, that's one of the things I've enjoyed. And if he can bring that type of dialogue to Star Trek characters, I welcome it. So I'm saying it officially. I love this. I think it's great. And you naysayers that just jumped on the negative bandwagon can suck it.
Okay. Well, now, let me ask you this, because this is where I come in with my question. Do you want to see Quentin Tarantino writing dialogue for Kirk and Spock, or if you're giving Quentin Tarantino a Star Trek film, you give him something entirely new to work with?
Yes to all of that. I think the original Trek is in his wheelhouse, and I think he gets those characters because he's a fan of it. And I think even if he were to give him something new, that would be great too, because then he can take some chances with the characters, like big chances, if it was like new Trek, which I actually would enjoy seeing. But if he's going to do Star Trek 4 with the Chris Pine crew and all that, I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on this. I'm a Tarantino fan. There are times when he's just absolutely on for me. There's been times where he's missed for me too. But for the most part, I've liked pretty much everything he's done. I would almost
Let me ask you real quick. What do you think he's missed on? Because there's a couple that he's missed for me too.
You know, there was aspects of The Hateful Eight I enjoyed because of the cast, but I there was something about that movie that I just couldn't quite connect with.
I would agree with you. That one was a miss for me.
I like I said, the cast itself was a lot of fun, but there was something there that didn't connect.
It took place in one room for like, you know, an hour and 30 minutes of that film.
Yeah. It's been a few more of his more recent efforts, I think, that, you know, I love Django. Django was great.
Yep, me too. I liked Inglourious Basterds too.
See, I'm going to get a little flat. There's things I really like about Inglourious Basterds, but there's some things that I'm just on Inglourious Basterds. It's a good movie. I just don't know if it's quite the hype that everybody seems to want to give it to me personally. But I think that's more a matter of personal taste than anything.
Well, like I said, I think his strength in writing is character development. And those are all the things that kind of shine. Like, Hateful Eight, the character interaction was great. I just didn't like how it was, the setting. It was very kind of claustrophobic. You look at any of his like classic films, you know, Reservoir Dogs and of course, like Jackie Brown and all those other films that he's done. He's really good at dialogue. And, I think this is something that Star Trek is known for. And, I say give it to him, man. I think this would be great. Especially if J.J. Abrams working on it, that's fine. I mean, I think he's going to keep him in check.
Yeah, well, and that's my big thing right there. And you just hit on it for me. I think more than anything. Now, the articles I've read have said Quentin Tarantino has a huge reverence for the original Trek. Yeah, he has a lot of respect for it. So I'm hoping between that and the fact J.J. will still be involved, I think when you see Quentin Tarantino go off the rails, it's because he has nobody to really kind of keep him on the rails.
Right.
And I'm hoping if that's the case where we're going to go with him doing something with Kirk and Spock and all that, JJ around and his reverence for the original Trek, I hope that would keep him on the rails. Now, if you're going to give him something new in Trek, something, and you want to go to a whole new corner of the Trek universe, let him go wild. Let him be full on Tarantino. Because I would love to see something crazy like that too. I mean, that could be a lot of fun.
I like your idea of just, I like the idea though of having just a standalone Star Trek film, just, you know, brand new. I don't really care what time frame it is right now, but maybe something after the original series and then before next gen would be kind of cool. But just give him a new crew and a new ship and just see what he can do with it.
Come on, Kevin. Though as we're talking about this, I'm thinking about this. I would love to see Quentin Tarantino write Lorca.
As much as that would be cool, I doubt that would happen. But yeah,
yeah. just saying. So, but you know, we're speaking of people who've done some Star Trek. Let's go back to Star Trek Into Darkness, because the beautiful Alice Eve, who was in that film, has been cast for season 2 of Iron Fist.
Do we know? Let me see. It's an unnamed role, it says here. Okay. Quote, "We are very excited to have actress Alice's nature join the cast of Marvel's Iron Fist." Marvel head of television and series executive producer Jeff Leb told Variety, "Her exceptional talent brings an intrigue and danger to her character unlike anyone else." Are we expecting a villain role here or like an ally of some sort?
With Iron Fist at this point, I'm not real sure, because, you know, a lot of people are kind of curious about what direction they're going to go with Iron Fist in season 2 to see if they learn from things people had issues with from season 1. And, you know, the whole other thing is I know Jessica Jones season 2 is wrapped up filming. Luke Cage season 2 is filming as we speak, and they're getting ready to start Iron Fist here soon. So there's a lot going on with these Netflix series, and there's already talk that Punisher season 2 has been confirmed as well.
Okay. I just hope they learned from what Sigourney Weaver's character did not bring us. They totally underutilized her character, and that was a big disappointment for me. I didn't have a problem with anything else except for that.
Yeah, and that in Defenders, yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. So now the last piece of news, Kevin, it's one I find very interesting, and I'm kind of surprised that there's been so much turn and hate towards what we're talking about. And that's the fact that the Frozen short is being pulled from Coco screenings. The Frozen short isn't that short. It's up almost 22 minutes that's been coming on before Coco.
I didn't see Coco. 20 minutes is a long time. Why are people having a problem with this short?
I think they've won the length of it. I think people just didn't. It's from what I gather, people just really didn't enjoy this short that much. They felt more like it was Disney just pushing something on them they didn't really want at this time. And, you know, I have to say, you add almost a 100-minute movie with Coco, you add in 20 minutes of trailers, and then you add in a 22-minute short for a children's film. That's putting a lot of commitment there. And I know one of the big gripes a lot of people had was they initially thought they were in the wrong film because the Frozen short lasts so long.
Yeah, it says Olaf's Frozen Adventure, one of Disney's less lauded short films, will soon be leaving theaters after screening in front of Pixar's Coco, the animated film inspired by Mexico's Day of the Dead. Yet, while some have suggested it's a direct response to poor audience reactions, Entertainment Weekly has learned that isn't the case.
Disney is saying that they always planned for this to be a limited engagement for this short.
Yeah. You know, I heard some people complain about it, and I heard a few saying, you know, they didn't mind. I can understand, you know, the extra time and being in the theater, and it lasts, you know, kids can start getting impatient. I got a question, though. Are we excited about Frozen 2?
You know, I'm not jumping up and down for Frozen 2, because I think the magic of the first Frozen was it was so much better than what people expected out of it. I think at this point, what we're seeing with Frozen 2 is going to be quite the litmus test to see if people are over Frozen and or if they've had too much of Frozen pushed on them. I enjoyed this little short, but I can see a couple of things where the gripes are. It's too long to be a short. This needed to be about 10 minutes long. It's a great little Christmas short. It fits the season, but it was too long. It's not a good match to put with Coco. It's just, you got two totally different things. And it's not a good match for it. And here's the other issue, and this is where I think a lot of people are really upset, is they feel they got something pushed down their throat when it's a Pixar film and people would have rather seen one of the great Pixar shorts.
Right.
And not this Frozen thing. I think if this would have just been a traditional Disney film, like maybe a Wreck-It Ralph 2 or another Big Hero 6, people would have been much better.
That's that's a good point, because those Pixar shorts have been so memorable and people are forgetting that it's a short.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm excited for Frozen 2 or not. I mean, I was more excited when my daughter Camille was into the original one, but you know, she's grown up a lot since that one. it's not on her radar anymore. So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious, but I still haven't seen Coco. I'm still on the fence about seeing it.
Well, again, I'll tell you, I think it's worth a check out for you, Kevin. I think it's a very, it's got that Pixar magic that I haven't seen in a while. And I would say give it a chance, go check it out. But now, Kevin, normally this would be buy it, stream it, unsee it time.
This is true.
But you know, the holidays come around and things get busy, things get a little crazy. And
dude, it's the calm before the storm.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
The storm, as the date we're recording, we're about 8 days away from the storm that will be known as The Last Jedi. So because we've had the holidays, you're prepping for the holidays, getting your decorations up, doing all these crazy things. Sometimes you just don't get a chance to see that much new in the theaters. And again, like you said, Kevin, it's the calm before the storm. The kind of movies we're getting right now are kind of Oscar season kind of movies. So maybe they're not quite that, oh, I need to rush to the theater to go see this. So you came up with a good idea of where do we stand on our Magic 8-Ball Christmas list, Kevin?
Yeah, the reason why I brought this up is because I wanted to know if you had experienced any new Christmas specials or Thanksgiving specials, because you know this also included Thanksgiving at the time, that maybe you hadn't seen before. Because you know, I always ask my friends at work, like, what's your favorite Christmas movies, or maybe some underneath the radar and stuff like that. You know, what are you watching? So I want to kind of get an update on that Magic 8-Ball Christmas holiday list. And I wanted to first, let's start with you. What have you watched so far that may have been on your list or may not have been on your list?
Well, as far as what was on my list, I of course watched WKRP on Thanksgiving morning. Recently had the annual family tree trimming party, which you could have been at, Kevin. But
okay, hold on. What the heck is a tree trimming party?
Okay, without going into a very long,
is this an Alaska thing or what is this? Who does that anymore?
Well, it kind of developed out of this several years ago. I was out helping my parents put up their Christmas tree. My mom was having some very bad flare-ups with her arthritis, and my dad was a little under the weather. So I invited a couple of our good friends, Matt Clifton and Elizabeth Berry, to come along, help us out, you know, put up some Christmas decorations on the tree. Matt brought his little sister, Katie, and my mom made a huge big pot of chili for everybody. Well, turns out Matt's little sister had never had chili before. So it kind of turned into this thing where it's almost become like an annual tradition. They come over, and as families have grown and like people have gotten married or had kids or something like that, they've added to the pot, and it's just become kind of a little party where everybody puts an ornament on the tree. The family makes up a big pot of chili and a bunch of Christmas cookies. So we kind of decorate the tree, have some chili, and watch Christmas specials all evening.
Okay, so is tree trimming an expression? You're not actually trimming a tree.
No, you're not. By trimming it, it's an old expression meaning you're decorating it.
Okay. All right. Okay.
No, but I do get out a saw blade and do a little bit here and there when nobody's looking.
So what did you catch up on? You said you watched the WKRP Thanksgiving Turkeys Away special. What else did you watch or have you watched so far?
Watched the Disney Mickey's Christmas Carol, which is a must watch every year. And there's always several other little classic Disney Christmas type shorts or wintertime shorts on that. There's a classic one with Donald Duck and Huey, Dewey, and Louie playing hockey. There's a great Mickey Mouse Pluto one with Chip and Dale, where they cut down a Christmas tree and Chip and Dale are in the tree they cut down. There's also a couple in one with Goofy on how to ski. So you know, that kind of fun stuff. We also watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which the original animated one, the great Boris Karloff doing the commentary of that wonderful animated piece. And then actually we watched something kind of interesting. As the party wound down, there was only a few of us left. And this is kind of interesting old school wise. It wasn't so much Christmas, but it had an interesting feel. My parents were really wanted to watch that Carol Burnett 50th anniversary special.
Oh, I wish I could have watched that. I missed that.
And that was a lot of fun. It was 2 hours and just a lot of old school comedy with Tim Conway, Corman.
Did she have back a lot of the old cast?
That was still alive or people who had guessed it. There was no Tim Conway. He was apparently under the weather, but she had a lot. It was an interesting thing because she had a lot of people on from the past of the show, but she had a lot of modern comedians. Kaley Cuoco, Maya Rudolph, Amy Poehler all were on talking about her influence on them and what they loved about the show. So it was a very, very touching show. Jim Carrey was on it.
I love the Carol Burnett show. We watched it as a family.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting watch. Now I'm on vacation next week, so a lot of my films are Scrooge, Die Hard, things like that, going to get watched in the next week and a half, and then a couple other Christmas specials. ABC, I know ABC, what used to be ABC Family, now is known as Freeform, has started their 25 Days of Christmas, where they show a lot of things. So there'll be much Christmas watching over the next couple of weeks. Kevin, what about you? Where are you at on your list?
It's funny, Die Hard fell into a couch potato theater moment for me because it was on cable TV and I ended up watching most of it, so that was kind of cool. Well, after our 8-Ball special there, I immediately went to iTunes and downloaded that WKRP in Cincinnati Turkey episode and watched that, and that brought back a lot of good memories. And what was funny too, our friends over at the Dragon Con American Sci-Fi Classics, they had changed their Facebook cover page to that episode, you know.
Now, Kevin, now that you watched that, there's something we need to discuss real quick.
Okay.
WKRP. Of course, Lonnie Anderson was always the one that everybody was drooling over and stuff like that.
No, not me.
Bailey was underratedly hot.
Oh, Bailey was so incredibly hot. Oh my God, I loved Bailey. Yeah. Oh yes, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, and a couple other things, just because of the time frame. I mean, how great was Howard Hessman as Dr. Johnny Fever?
Oh, Howard Hessman and Tim Reed as Venus Flytrap.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I forgot just how epic Venus Flytrap's afro was.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of those underrated TV shows, and I love the opening theme as well, and Les Nessman is just really, really funny, and he definitely had a highlight in that one. By God, good gracious, I thought turkeys could fly. Yeah, so I watched that. I also had to watch a Christmas classic, just with a great ensemble cast of famous people, Love Actually.
Oh yes.
Had to watch that. And, you know, it's just a really good Christmas movie. I really enjoy that one. You know, and I have some other films here that are, on the docket. Of course, I want to watch Scrooged and Elf with Camille. And, but you know what I did? This might be considered sacrilege to some people, but I have my original DVD copy of It's a Wonderful Life here.
Mm-hmm.
They were selling the Blu-ray version at Target for like $10. It was on sale. And there's a special feature too on here I don't think my DVD have, but I always have watched this in black and white. I think I remember seeing the colorized version a long time ago. So I bought it because I kind of want to see the colorized version to see how well it holds up on Blu-ray. It's probably still one of those films I'll rather watch in black and white, but I bought it out of curiosity because it was cheap, you know? And so I got to go with that. And also I got Christmas Vacation over here. I haven't seen that in a while, actually. It's been a long time since I've seen that. It hasn't really been on my rotation, but I want to put it back on. So, of course, I've been diving into my Hallmark films, you know, the sappy Christmas films. I've been watching that. A friend of mine, she said, have you seen this Netflix original film called A Christmas Prince? And I'm like, no, I haven't seen it. She's like, well, you want to check it out? It stars Rose McIver, who was in the iZombie films.
Yes, yes.
Or I'm sorry, iZombie TV series. And, you know, it's your typical, you know, type of, you know, girl falls for a princess type, prince type thing. It says, when a porter goes undercover as a tutor to get the inside scoop on a playboy prince, she gets tangled in some royal intrigue and ends up finding love. Now, what's funny about this is this is actually a Netflix original. It's not a a Hallmark one. So if you're in for like, if you want like a good sappy, you know, predictable romantic, you know, Christmas film, go ahead and check this out. But what I thought was interesting too is that Alice Krieg plays the queen. Remember who Alice Krieg was?
Oh,
she was the Borg queen in First Contact.
That's right.
And then she returned later after they had someone else play the Borg queen in a Voyager episode or two.
Yes.
So she's in that as well. But what I liked about it, though, is they actually filmed it on location in Romania, where the castle and stuff were. So I always like it when they kind of go to these other places and do that. It's sappy. It's fun. But if you want something, you know, that's a good Christmas movie, I definitely recommend that. But yeah, so that's where I'm at right now. I still have some to catch up on, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm trying to try new stuff as well.
Yeah.
That I haven't seen before and maybe kind of put in the Christmas rotation. Because I love Christmas movies. It always gets me in the mood. And you know, you watch these because, you know, you want to kind of, you want some escapism out of them. And if you're, and I know a lot of people struggle during the holidays as well. You know, it is tough for a lot of people. And these are the type of films that do carry a lot of people through the holidays. If they are feeling kind of out of it and maybe they're missing their family, if they're not with their family and with their loved ones, this is another way to help kind of, you know, get you through the holidays.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this too, Kevin, because we talked a little bit this before we started recording. We've got our kind of our downbreak in TV because everything's going on. It's holiday hiatus. Is there anything you want to play catch up on or something that might be coming out here in the next few weeks that you want to make sure you're going to have this free time to see it? Any shows or anything like that?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have free time during the holidays because my work is real busy. You know, when it comes to catch up on stuff, I'm trying to try some new things. There was there's that Western on Netflix.
Oh, Godless.
Godless, yeah. I wanted to check that out. There's some other movies. There's some more Christmas stuff that I want to check out. There's some documentaries on Netflix I was looking at too, you know, I want to see what Amazon Prime has. I haven't watched some Amazon Prime stuff recently, and someone was recommending a show on there. So you know, for me, it gets pretty busy for my time. I don't have vacation time during the holidays because you know, where I'm working in retail, this is our busiest time of the year.
That's true. And, you know, this is kind of my calm before the storm. But there's a couple of things that I'm on coming out on Netflix that I'm looking very forward to. You mentioned Godless. I'd like to check that out. There's another show that a lot of people are talking about called Dark on Netflix, which a lot of...
Yeah. Well, I'd heard some rumblings about that. What's the deal with that?
I'm not real sure. A lot of people have said if you liked Stranger Things, you'll like the premise behind Dark. So I haven't got a chance to really dive into it yet. So I'm hoping maybe with this week off, I can dive into that a little bit. A couple other Netflix things that I'm very excited for that are going to hit before the end of this year, though, Kevin, is season 4 of Black Mirror.
Okay, I got a question about that. I had posted something because it looks like there was an episode about kind of like a Star Trek-y yes. type crew. I need you to really kind of explain to me what the premise of Dark Mirror is. Am I right that it's an anthology show that it's every episode's different about something else, and it each episode is not related to the other one?
Yeah, Black Mirror is an anthology show. Think of it kind of as a British Twilight Zone, but it's a little bit edgier. You're not going to get gore and stuff like that. But it's really, they're not afraid to tackle some interesting subjects with it. I usually find with Black Mirror that you always have at least 2 to 3 just mind-blowingly outstanding episodes in every season. So I'm very excited about that. But, you know, Kevin, the show I'm really excited for debuts on Netflix on December 22nd.
And yeah.
You know exactly where I'm going with this because it's kind of a documentary series called The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about Bright.
Well, there's that, too. There's that, too. But I'm looking forward to the toys, this documentary series, The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, what's that about?
They're going to be focusing on the toys of the 1980s.
Oh, that's stuff we like. That's all stuff we like.
Transformers, G.I. Joe, Masters of the Universe, several other ones. But, I mean, especially with Raider Player running around the corner, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, very cool. Very, very cool.
But, yeah, you also mentioned Will Smith's movie Bright on Netflix, which I'm very excited for. And, you know, it's just a good time to watch the Christmas specials and all of that. So there's a lot going on, and you know, we're gonna have this one oddball week for Buy It, Stream It, and See It, but trust me, the storm is about to be here, Kevin.
Oh yes.
But you know, since we've done that, you know, one thing we do have this week, I think it's time once again to visit.
Welcome to Kevin's Video Vault.
What you got for us, Kevin? Santa on the roof already? Is that him walking across my roof?
We know that sound. That's a DVD case off my shelf, off my personal library of physical media. Yes. Now, when I was looking at films to pull for this, this has always been on my radar. I think, you know, whenever I talk to people about this, they go, oh, I like that movie. I like that movie. But it doesn't kind of stand out as like one of the great kind of Vietnam type films, because they were all coming out in the 80s, because you know, this was about 10 years after Vietnam. Of course, we got the Rambo films and Chuck Norris, you know, Missing in Action films. But one of my favorites, because of the cast as well, was Uncommon Valor, starring Gene Hackman. Have you seen this film?
I have, but I'll be honest with you, Kevin, it has been a very long time since I've seen this film.
Well, basically, the story, it's about going back and rescuing, you know, American, you know, prisoners of war that have been kept prisoner in Vietnam, where the, of course, the you know, U.S. government has done nothing to try and rescue or get back. And Gene Hackman plays Colonel Jason Rhodes, and his son was part of a group of missing, you know, MIAs. That never came back from the war. And he goes on a personal mission, you know, trying to find evidence of these POW camps that still exist. And you see him going, you know, into, you know, Cambodia and Philippines, trying to find information. And he finds information, and he's not getting any help from the government. So he's being financed by a friend of his to help put together a group of guys that were part of his son's platoon to go back and rescue him and some others. And the guy that's helping him is Robert Stack. He plays McGregor. But this cast is really, really cool. We get Fred Ward, Red Brown, Randall Tex Cobb, Tim Thomerson, and a very young Patrick Swayze plays Kevin Scott. And he's not a Vietnam vet, but his father, as we find out later on, was missing in action or killed in action and stuff. So he had some personal interest into it, even though he's never been in war. And so basically what happens is that they do some training here in America in a private field that has kind of a mock-up of the prisoner of war camp. And a lot of these guys, including Fred Ward's character, they still have some PTSD, some issues and stuff that's haunted them from this. So it's about getting them back together and facing their fears and kind of becoming a unit again. And they get all their weapons and everything, and they end up going over to Vietnam. But what happens is their stuff gets confiscated and stuff. And so now they're out with weapons. So now they have to kind of like go underneath the radar and mix with the black market and try to, and they find like a bunch of these old like weapons from like World War II instead. So they got like Tommy guns. They got, 1911 pistols. They got old bazookas, and so they're having to use all of this old artillery and weapons to still continue with their mission. And I think it was filmed. I think it was filmed in probably Hawaii, because it kind of looks like it was filmed in Hawaii. But it's just a really good film. Great cast. Randall Tex Cobb is the one that probably steals the film along with Fred Ward. Because Randall Tex Cobb's character has kind of like gone a little loony, and there's something wrong up in his head. But when he gets together,
Tex Cobb, that's just the normal for Tom.
He's always good at playing those roles, and being a Highlander fan, we remember him from a famous Highlander episode as well. But he's just one of those great character actors, and Fred Ward is really good in this. He's the one that deals with the PTSD, and it's just a fun movie, and one of those underrated Vietnam type. We're going back to rescue our guys. It gets kind of put under the radar, and I highly recommend it. I know there's a fan base for it out there, and Gene Hackman, of course, is Gene Hackman. He's great in this film. I love him in almost everything he's done. Definitely worth a rewatch if you haven't seen it before. And forgetting the guy's name, what's his name? I'm forgetting his name, he was one of the guys. He's a tall African American gentleman, and he was one of the guys that was in. Did you ever watch Married with Children? And Ed Bundy had the No Ma'am group of guys.
Oh yes.
Yes, his tall African American buddy. Yeah. Well, he's in this one as well. He's also very good. So, just a really really good film, worth seeing and checking out. And it's Uncommon Valor, starring Gene Hackman and a very young Patrick Swayze.
It is a very good film from my memory too. But
by the way, it did come out in 1983. It was released in December.
Yep, but you know, Kevin. I great movies and stuff like that, but maybe we can find something with a little Christmas cheer too. I don't know if the Vietnam War inspires Christmas cheer.
By the way, I did want to mention. I know it's not Christmas movie, but sometimes during the holidays, you want to watch something that's not a holiday film. You know, maybe you're not in the mood for it. Maybe you need a good war flick. I recommend this.
That's what RoboCop is for.
And I did, this is true. I did want to mention the director, Ted Kotcheff. He directed First Blood.
Oh, interesting.
Which came out in 82. And he also directed the other awesome classic, Weekend at Bernie's, 1989.
Oh, yes. Kevin Kline's best role.
Wait, Kevin Kline?
Oh, no. Who played Bernie?
Oh yeah, not Kevin Kline. Hold on. Who was Bernie? Bernie Lomax, Terry Kaiser. That's who
it was. Right. It's late, folks. Well, you know, I think on that note, Kevin, we got a lot of exciting things besides Culture Clash going around the Fandom Podcast Network, and it starts with Blood of Kings. What you got for us?
Yes, we're really excited. We just released part 4 of our look back at the Highlander TV show 25th anniversary convention that both Norm and I attended. And we've done several interviews, and this one is really cool. It's actually our celebrity interview, one that we did. We interviewed F. Bron McAsh, who is the Swordmaster for the Highlander TV series. We also interviewed James Horan, who played Grayson in the pivotal episode Band of Brothers, which is definitely like a top 5, top 10 TV series. That was the episode in the first season that really turned Highlander around and changed things.
Yeah.
And also recently, we on that interview too, we interviewed him for Discoville. I think it was episode 4 or 5, talking about his... A portrayal as High Priest Sazeron, as one of the Krill High Priest in the Krill episode where Discoville, where Mercer and Malloy had to go undercover as the Krill. So we interviewed him about that in that episode. But so we're really excited about that because this is the fourth and final one covering that weekend that we look back very fondly on. And after that, next week we're going to have the Kurgan character profile. When Norm and I are guested with, we have special guest Aaron Gill, who's a big fan of the Kurgan, and of course Clancy Brown, who played him. We do a really cool look on his character. And what we do is we bring up a lot of stuff that came up in the comic books and stuff that a lot of people don't know about, that they went back on his backstory and kind of filled out some holes, so you learn a lot more about the Kurgan. So that's been happening on Blood of Kings.
Yeah, no, the guys got some great stuff going on over there. But personally, I'm really excited what's happening over on the couch, and that would be the Couch Potato Theater. Because not only have we got some great shows out there, we have our Blade Runner retrospective, which we did to tie in with the release of Blade Runner 2049. We also, Kevin and I, sat back and did a retrospective and commentary on the great Roman Mitra film, Doomsday, which that was a lot of fun, Kevin.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. One of my guilty pleasures.
And we've got a couple new ones coming out here shortly. First and foremost, we've got a special Doctor Who Couch Potato Theater with Davis Grayson, where he and his guest Christian sat back and we'll have both a retrospective and a commentary for the classic Doctor Who US TV special, which was the only appearance of the Eighth Doctor played by Paul McGann. We got a lot of Doctor Who stuff coming up as we're getting close to the annual Christmas special and a huge change coming for the Doctor. So we're going to give the Doctor quite a bit of attention here in the next few weeks on the Fandom Podcast Network. And then, Kevin, we got coming out probably within the next week or so something really fun. We sat back and we did a retrospective for Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Oh, yes. A fun, it was a 1991 action year that I always look back and I watch it every time that it's on. And it's just a really, really good fun film. We had our friends from Down Under. We had Adam O'Brien and Brad Macca McNaughton on to do that because they're big fans of that film. Just a good, fun action film.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you know what? We're getting ready to enter the time warp one more time because we're about to finally finish up with the movies of 1987, Kevin.
Yes, we're recording that this weekend. You're going to be on board with that. And we're covering up the, I guess you can kind of call it the holiday season, October, November, and December of 1987. All movies that are 30 years old. And we're going to cover some classic films like my favorite vampire film, Near Dark, Less Than Zero, The Running Man, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's another film I need to watch for the holiday. Wall Street, Moonstruck, Overboard, and Good Morning Vietnam.
It's impossible to not do that when you say the title of that movie.
I know, right? And then, of course, recently we did the Buffy the Vampire 25th anniversary for our Halloween special where you and Aaron Gill knocked it out of the park with some good old Buffy trivia.
Gotta love Mr. Pointy. That's all I gotta say. And of course, you know, if you're looking for anything with suspense, it else goes to Good Evening and Alfred Hitchcock podcast with our friends Brandon Che Matula, Tom Caldwell, and Chris High. It's an education on suspense. If you need to know anything about Alfred Hitchcock, it's the place to go. And it's exclusively here to the Fandom Podcast Network. And we're so glad to have those guys on board. You should get college credit for listening to that podcast, Kevin.
I know, right?
But and of course, finally, Kevin, we are no longer friends for the week.
No, we are bitter enemies. Bitter enemies. I don't know you, man. You're dead to me.
Yeah, there will be blood. Oh yes, there will be blood. And of course, it is week 14 for the end zone, and it is Raiders Chiefs round 2. This time it's personal.
Raiders won the first game, and I remember you saying, hey, you guys still got to come to Kansas City.
We're going to fill you with barbecue, get you slowed down, and, you know, we got to get back on our winning ways at some point, you would hope. So, but you know what, Kevin? It's feeling about that time. Do you have some wisdom for us this week?
I do. I always like to share some quotes. I like to say, may the force be with you, live long and prosper, and...
Star Wars week. 8 days we get stars.
That's my quote.
Isn't that little independent film that's coming out over the holidays?
Yeah. Look, kind of looking forward to that. I'm really excited though. Camille is going to be going to her first Star Wars premiere for The Last Jedi. And we got our tickets. We're going to go with our 501st friends. I'm really excited. And then the day after, on Friday, I'm going to see 3 consecutive IMAX showings in 3D.
Now, Kevin, you just need to admit it.
What?
You're going to go 30 times.
I'm not going to see it 30 times. I just did that for Force Awakens to kind of, you know, relive my old New Hope days when I would just go see it every weekend.
Now, before we close out the show, Kevin, I've got a very special heartfelt message I want to get out there. Okay, so just bear with me for a moment. This is from the heart. Baby, if you ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air on the Fandom Podcast Network. the Fandom Podcast Network, Mr. FPNet.
And with played, sir.
And with that, it is time to once again close out the Clash, your home for all your pop culture, movie reviews, and just crazy fun, because you never know what we're going to come up with. Thank you for listening, and good night, everybody.
Baby, if you've ever wondered whatever became of me, I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, WKRP. Got kind of tired of packing and unpacking, from town to town, up and down the dial. Maybe you and me were never meant to be, just maybe think of me once in a while. I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.